Greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country tonight or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become than you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. And greetings, Earth Explorers. All over the world, I'm so glad that you are here, and I am here, and we are here together. Coming to you live tonight from Southern Mississippi, May 21st, 2011. Yes, we made it. I first want to extend my apologies for not having any archives up. Tonight will be the first archived program at xsquaredradio.com since March 27th. Many of you have written me and said, hey, what's up? Where are the archives? That's okay. I appreciate it. I can go back and dig up some classic archives and fill up April for you and the first couple of weeks of May. We have been doing live shows as often as I can, but we've been doing them by cell phone on the road, and you never know where those are going to go. They're kind of neat to listen to, but we don't record them. BBS Radio records them, and if you want to listen to those programs, you can go to bbsradio.com and you can sign up for their archives, which I recommend anyway. It's cost-effective and helps keep the lights on at the studio in Paradise, California. But you can stay faithful and loyal, and we'll be having X Squared Radio archives up as soon as we can. And hopefully we've resumed that. As you know, the day job has been taking more time than usual because I've had a deadline. And I always try to make my deadlines, and sometimes it precludes doing X Squared Radio Live. As those of you who have listened to X Squared Radio for, it's now 6 years, can testify from time to time, the host is AWOL from doing an archive program. The solar wind is up to a brisk 449 kilometers per second. There are two sunspots, 1214 and 1216. They do not pose any threat to Earth for strong flares. Still, an enormous filament snapped today, sending a huge prominence into space. All in all, the sun is pretty quiet right now. The average number of earthquakes around the Earth, nothing to write to your friends in Japan about. However, the radiation from the Japanese earthquake damage has shown up just about everywhere. I am going to post a link, which was posted for a very short amount of time, then it was lost. However, some very diligent researchers found the link before it disappeared, copied all the content, rehosted it, and so the information is not lost. This information is the monitoring by the Norwegian air quality people of the radiation that's been leaked from the reactors in Japan around the world. The path of this is quite alarming. And by the way, they're tracking most of the nuclides. They're tracking cesium-137. They're tracking iodine-131, xenon-133. And it's pretty massive. Showing up in Massachusetts, showing up in all over the Pacific of the United States. It's showing up in Canada. And... And we're going to try and keep you posted on this. Now, the interesting thing is that, as in most EPA and Nuclear Regulatory Commission limits, when we get close to the limits, they just raise the limit so that the alarms don't go off in your mind. And they say, oh, well, you know, 100 times the safe limit is still safe. Don't worry about it. The fact is, and I can speak with some authority because, let me just pull it off here. Okay. Listen to this. You hear that? This right here against the microphone. You hear this? No. Okay, I guess you can't hear it because it's a ring. This is my class ring from Tennessee Technological University. It is a bachelor's degree in nuclear chemistry. So I speak with a little bit of authority. A little bit of radiation is no good for you. A little bit one time, like going to the dentist office or taking a flight and getting the whole Monty scan, is, in the grand scheme of things, probably harmless. I think you could scan a million people, and I don't think that you would statistically have anything worth reporting. But a small amount of radiation in a chronic manner, that is to say repeated or continuous exposure to this small amount, hour after hour, day after day, week after week, year after year, is just as mutating as an acute version that isn't deadly. These neutrons, these alpha particles, as they come into your body, they stick to tissue in your body. And when they decay usually in an alpha fashion. That is to say, it's a particle decay. And it usually destroys tissue or at least dense molecular material nearby. That could be enzymes, it could be proteins. Proteins are rather large in the human body. And most of the very dense ones are located in the bone or in the marrow of the bones, which is where the blood is manufactured. That's where the blood factory is in the body. And so leukemia is the most common side effect from chronic radiation exposure. Now, what we have seen and have paid as a government many reparations for is the result of this chronic radiation. We've done it. We've done it to our own people. We irradiated people in Utah and northern Arizona. We didn't tell them about it, of course, but it was discovered later on, you know, freedom of information, blah, blah, blah. And the descendants of these people noticed that their parents and grandparents and great-grandparents were all dying of disproportionately high levels of strange cancers, strange and very common in their particular population cancers. And so it was linked to these heretofore unrevealed strange nuclear tests in the upper atmosphere above these communities, of course. Small levels of radiation, and gee, we really didn't know what we were doing. We didn't know it was harmful to people. We thought if they weren't blown away in a mighty blast that no harm would come of it. In fact, they might even live longer than other people. But that wasn't the case. And it isn't the case now. These nuclides being spread all around the planet, and they're not being spread at high altitude, by the way, people. These monitoring levels are at 15,000 feet. 15,000 feet. That's where airplanes fly. That's where rain falls from. This is radiation that is where the rubber meets the road, okay? And so if we'll put the link up on the website so that you can monitor it yourself. You can see what's going on. The good news is that it's high latitude. So if you are in the middle of the country or along the Gulf Coast, you're probably not going to be exposed. The bad news is that the source is still turned on. It's not like it was a momentary event and now it's done. It's still leaking. And so this chronic amount of small amounts of radiation is still pouring into the atmosphere and ever will be until they figure out how to seal this thing. It's not going to be easy to do. If you go do a satellite view of this area, you're probably not going to find very updated photographs, but nevertheless, there are updated photographs of it. One of the things that you'll notice above Fukushima, Japan, is steam. Yes, steam coming from these facilities. Now, what that means is that cooling water is being pumped into the reactor containment area to keep it somewhere around 212 degrees. That steam is a good thing. It means that at least the reactor is being kept cool enough so it doesn't start its march down through the core of the Earth if it will go that far. By the way, there is a very thick, and by thick I mean about 12-inch thick steel tube, like a giant water slide, polished mirror smooth on the inside at great expense and inclined from the bottom of the reactor to the sea, so that should this pile burn its way through the containment, which is supposedly impregnable, but of course not impregnable to a runaway nuclear meltdown. The plan is that it will hit this chute, and that before it completely burns through this 1 foot thick steel tube, it will slide into the sea, directly into the sea. That means that the nuclear pile, by the way, is quite dense, somewhere above 200 grams per mole, which is, eight times as dense as iron. So it's much heavier than gold, about three times heavier than gold. It will sink rapidly to the bottom of the Pacific Ocean, where it will hopefully remain cool with all that cold seawater around it. And the solution is dilution, so they say, but this pile nonetheless will be 100% exposed to the sea, as deep and cold as it might be. By the way, what else is down there? Besides blind sea life, there's also a sea, an ocean layer of liquid methane. So should that methane boil off, we have other things to worry about in our atmosphere. Normal amount of earthquakes, nothing to write home about there. If you're thinking about getting prepared, and by the way, yesterday I drove from central Louisiana down Highway 49 to Interstate 10 and took 10 east over to Highway 59, which is in the middle of Mississippi and out north of New Orleans, and drove back up here to southern Mississippi. Now, one of the things that really was remarkable is the amount of water. That Mississippi is not flooded a little bit. I was on 10 for about 100 miles, and I never got away from the river. 100 miles traveling east, and it was completely underwater. So, however, the floodwaters are controllable and nothing is getting away from itself, so the big cities, I think, are safe for now. If we don't get a whole lot more rain. Now, if you're thinking about getting prepared, which I highly recommend, some level of preparedness, even if it's only a three-day kit, please visit our friends at 1-800-PREPARE.com, 1-800-PREPARE.com, founded by my friend Paul Faust and his firefighter buddies in New York after 9/11. They saw the same thing that I saw, and that is that there were very few sites that really had the consumer in mind. There were some sites that pushed particular brands. They really didn't work with consumers. They didn't work with affiliates. And so it took a while to find, but 1-800-PREPARE.com will work with you. And they have, I think, the best prices, the best packaging, free shipping in most cases, lots of specials going on all the time. And I've bought stuff from there, and I was really amazed by the quality of the packaging. Some of the stuff you don't have to touch for upwards of 25 years. You just buy it, put it in the closet. Believe me, the packaging, it's in a red package with a cross on it. It's ready to go, ready to grab. Everything you need is in there for 72 hours, or if you want to, you can get a 3-month supply or a 6-month supply for 1, 2, 5, 10 people, whatever you can afford. If you want to help take care of your neighbors or your loved ones, grab it and go. Grab it and walk, grab it and ride your bike, grab it and stick it in your car. It's ready to go when you are. 1-800-PREPARE.com. Now, as we have been watching in the news, you know, I got to say it's a little bit amusing, but it's also alarming in the sense that that there are still individuals out there making a ton of money off of you guys and off of your fear. And that's what tonight's program is on. We're going to try and cover that. And if you'll give me 40 seconds to get something to take care of my parched throat, we'll be right back with more X Squared Radio. We're going to talk about it. Believe it or not, the world didn't end. We'll be right back. And here we are, back with X Squared Radio. First hour, May 21st, 2011, coming to you from southern Mississippi. Our AccuWindow forecast, 91 degrees. Humidity is not too bad. I almost saw a bird burst into flames as it took off from the telephone wires across the street. Not quite that hot. Not like Idaho hot. Why is the world going to end on May 21st? That's today. And it was actually supposed to end at 6 p.m. Well, besides the local church now being worth $72 million from this wonderful marketing plan, which he pulled off, I looked at the reasoning behind it. What in the world would get so many people on a church bus? That's a good question. You know, the first proof is based on Genesis. That's in the Bible. Genesis chapter 7, verse 4, when God said to Noah, 7 days from now, I will send rain on the earth for 40 days and 40 nights, and I will wipe from the face of the earth every living creature I have made. Okay, that's the God I want to follow. I just wanted to throw that in there. The second proof looks at the significance of the number of days between the crucifixion and May 21st, 2011. Now, this should be interesting to you. I mean, if this doesn't convince you, I don't know what will, people. There are 722,500 days between these dates. 722,500 is a significant number because it is composed of the significant numbers 5 times 10 times 17 times 5 times 10 times 17. I'm convinced right away. 5 signifies redemption. 10 signifies completion. And 17 signifies heaven. The numbers represent the day of redemption, 5, and the end of the Christian era, 10, and the ascent to heaven, 17. And these factors are doubled for added significance and also to fit into the May 21st thing, just so you know. Antichrist. The prince who confirms the covenant in Daniel, Book of Daniel, Old Testament, chapter 9, sets up a one-world government. Revelation 6:2, Revelations 13:1 through 8. Efforts toward this have been taking place all around us with the United Nations, European Union, and possibly impending North American Union as evidence. The passage in Daniel links the Antichrist with the people who destroyed Jerusalem, and we know that people to be the Romans. Antichrist's kingdom will be likely to be a global revival of the Roman Empire. Well, that makes a lot of sense, I guess. You know, the Piso family was sort of like the Rockefellers of the Roman days. No, they weren't really the leaders, but they were the money behind the leaders. They were the influence behind the leaders. They were the warlords of the day, okay? They were the ones who were selling the armor and owned the mines and, you know, owned the cattle that made the leather, that made the uniforms for both sides. And they're also the ones that controlled the universities and the learning and thus influenced most of government. And history will prove out that this family actually wrote most of what we see as the Bible. They actually created the characters that make up the Bible. One of the most powerful historians upon which we base many of our interpretations of the Bible is an historian whose name is Josephus. It's a big, thick book. I read it. I have it in my library. I put a lot of stock and post-it notes in it for many decades until I realized that Josephus was a pen name for one of the members of the Piso family, that it was actually a Piso sire that wrote all of the observations of Josephus to try to tie all this together so that one church could kind of pull all of the rogue governments together under a umbrella of fear and domination so terrible that it would strike dumb any effort to revolt against it. Even if you win against us today, you will burn in hell forever. You're not willing to risk that, are you? Kind of easy to keep the whip just above the flesh when you can wield something like that. To go on, the Antichrist establishes a 7-year covenant of peace with Israel. That would be in the book of Isaiah, chapter 28, verse 15. Also in Daniel, chapter 9, 24 through 27. A global church is established, Revelation 17:1 through 15, which is the ultimate culmination of thousands of years of idolatry on the part of Babylon. Babylon the Great, Babylon the capitalist society, Babylon the fascists. As Rome will hold political sway over the world, so will Babylon hold the world in a religious stranglehold. All interfaith and ecumenical movements seem to be working toward this, especially where cooperation between the Roman Catholics and Muslims is concerned. Now, for many, we think that the Roman Catholics, the regular Catholics, represent Rome, and the Muslims, which would be Babylon, Iraq, Saudi Arabia, now most of Malaysia and all of that by force, of course, represents Babylon. So that's how the two sides are kind of facing off. Now, I don't really see this as a religious war. I don't see this as religious powers. I don't see the calling upon the same God on behalf of one faction or another as being the main driver. I think that's pretty much smoke and mirrors always has been. No pun intended, smoke and pillar of fire, I meant to say. I don't think so. I think that this is the theme song, as it were, for the economic control of the world. It goes back much, much further than just mankind. It goes back into alchemical designs, which we talk about in the books, The Ark of Millions of Years, volumes 1 through 3. By the way, volume 4 is at the publisher and should be out next month. You will enjoy it. It's technically quite good. No, what we found was that there is a design, there is a process, a pattern. It's tried and true. It works world after world, and it has been used by none other than the Nephilim for many worlds to subjugate those peoples. And no matter how they struggle, no matter how they lash out at the whip or pull at the ankle rope, they cannot break free. They cannot become free, because everything they breathe, everything they wear, everything they eat, everything they build, everything that they take pride in comes through that process. And it is a process of economic control. It is a process of alchemy. Now, we know alchemy from many a medieval film and writing as to be the art of turning lead into gold. The Druids understand this process very well, because the Freemasons studied it, practiced it, and used it for millennia to control societies. Is it the actual turning of lead into gold? No. It is the turning of base metals, parking lot gravel, okay, into gold. It is the method of turning that which is in your hands completely worthless. But in the system, a representation of wealth. I am holding in my fingers right now a freshly printed, not by me, of course, who would waste the time, a freshly printed $1 bill. This bill was designed by none other than the person whose name is on the front of it, George Washington. A Federal Reserve note, a promise to pay, the almighty dollar bill. On it, unquestionably cataloged, almost innumerable Freemason symbolism. Why? Well, Washington and the founders of Washington, D.C., had the idea that if they took this young nation, one that, you know, is barely out of diapers compared to other societies on this world, and we established it with the architecture of, let's say, ancient Greece, and we put enough ancient symbolisms on its money, on its paper, that the world would accept it just based on these talismans of antiquity and respect. And so they did. Because for a long time, it wasn't the turning of this paper into gold, not at all. In fact, the reality was that this paper was actually backed by gold. It could actually be exchanged for gold. But there was something about carrying paper folded up in some animal hide or pouch on your belt that was a little safer, a little more secure, and certainly easier to haul around $100 in cash than it was $100 worth of gold in those days. And besides, you know, there was an inherent bullseye that came along with the gold. If you packed it around you, you knew pretty much if someone heard the tinkle of gold in your pouch that whether the robber could read or not, you were going to be knocked in the head and your gold was going to be taken. But the dollar bill gave this kind of contractual feasibility to commerce. We could actually create credit, and we could transfer that credit. We could transfer contracts across the ocean. We could trade one nation with another nation, and we could, in classic Roman style, as they proved out over their 1,000 years of peaceful reign, that they could move money from one place to the other, and it would retain its value, plus or minus a little bit of, you know, exchange rate. But the truth is that the dollar was based on gold, and it was based on silver. And sometime in the early days, gold got disconnected from the dollar bill. Now, the silver hung around. It was like silver was rare, but not quite as rare. And it was like, we must do this slowly, people. Nobody is going to believe that this paper is worth anything. If we just say, okay, this fresh bale of greenbacks, come and get it. This is the new value. The people weren't buying it. It had to be backed by gold. And then the gold kind of slipped out of the equation and silver stayed behind. And somewhere in the early days after the turn of the 20th century, that's in the 1900s, silver was removed as a backing for dollars. And this was not met with much support. In fact, there was a populist movement that was spinelessly led by William Cullen Bryant to get this nation back on the right track, to get it back on something based in value. And although, you know, try as he might, he was sort of like the engine that couldn't. He would, a great orator and a great hand waver and hand shaker and train writing prognosticator, he just couldn't seem to bring it home. In fact, the satire, The Wizard of Oz, was written about this very thing. The Cowardly Lion was William Cullen Bryant. The Wizard of Oz, the Tin Man, represented the industrialist, the mechanical machines of industry. And, of course, the Man of Straw represented the farmer, you know, had no brains at all. And the industrialist had no heart. And then there was little Dorothy, you know, from Kansas, who had her silver slippers off to the land of Oz. And all she really needed to do, as was told by the good witch of the North, is to click her silver heels together three times and she could go home. In other words, return to the silver standard, United States of America, and you can go home. Well, that's what the story was about. Hollywood took a little bit of license with it. Judy Garland and Hollywood composers and choreographers took license with the story. Silver definitely wasn't sexy, so the slippers were changed to ruby, but they weren't ruby in Frank L. Baum's book. They were silver, just so you know. Yeah, I still have my senior paper to back this up, so I know what I'm talking about. As we see this alchemical process, it's almost comical to map it out. It's almost like like a play, going from scene to scene, act to act, and some of us have read the whole play, and we know how it ends. And like a six-year-old sitting there watching the same movie for the 30th time, driving their parents crazy because they've already seen it 30 times. What in the world is it that you want to see this movie 30 times? I don't understand it. Well, there's a certain security with a six-year-old. They want to know that when they watch that movie, they drift away from the knee skinnings and the fashion insults and the struggles of grades and social blending, that this movie is going to unfold. And there's a certain security that the 30th time they watch it, it will unfold exactly the way it did the 29th time that they watched it, and the 28th time that they watched it. And still they know the villain is behind the wall, and still they know that the earthquake is going to come, and that the man is going to fall in love with the woman, but still they watch, because there's a security in knowing that this is going to happen. And the first time that they saw a movie that didn't have a happy ending, they also knew that, again, there was going to be no happy ending. That, again, their desire to write some last few lines that save the day, that leave some hope that someone in this movie is going to live happily ever after, it just doesn't come. And that's what it's like, my fellow Earth explorers, reading this play. To have seen the ancients come here and design this alchemical process of taking something worthless like copper or nickel and making something valuable out of it, removing the gold, removing the silver, the rarity, the scarcity, the value of that thing, and still let that thing perpetuate, first in coin and then in paper and then finally in plastic and now in just a series of ones and zeros, just ones and zeros. The Federal Reserve has nothing. They have no safe. They have no deposits. They have nothing in reserve. They're not federal. They're not ours. And yet they are the ones that determine the money supply. They are the ones that determine if it will inflate by printing more, or will deflate, adding ever so slightly more value to it by letting it attrit, is totally in the hands of the fox guarding the hen house. And the fact that there's no value backing it whatsoever means that the play is going to end up the same way it always ends up every time I watch it. It is the complete subjugation of all races into one economic system from which there is no escape. You can own no home. You cannot buy a car. You cannot license that car. You cannot insurance that car. You cannot resell that car to someone else. There is no transfer of wealth. There is no contract to pay without the ones and the zeros. And if that system decides that what you have is of no value, it cannot have value, and it cannot be traded to another for anything. It is the complete subjugation of everything physical, even your body. Now, I respect the study of what is left of these biblical texts. I've done it myself. I've taught it myself. I understand the parts that mean something and the parts that are meaningless. And I also understand the parts that have been changed. There is no doubt that translators went through years of consternations to make sure that these dates, although these men did not know each other and had in some cases never seen the work of the other, that these dates don't collide or overwrite the other. Still, they are confusing and not designed to comfort the soul. As it turns out, there are predictions that the world is going to end in 2011, 2012, 2015, 2019, 2020, 2025, and 2026. I intend to be around for all of those, and I've already marked my calendar, and I've already read the play. And I can tell you, there's a happy ending for all of these. Some would say that none of these are true. Some would say that the real solution, well, is just to stay ready all the time. That's what most churches, most pastors, most prophets will tell you. Don't rely on a date, for even the angels do not know the day of his coming. And it will be a great and dreadful day of the Lord. So stay ready all the time. Now, this is the subject of this hour tonight on X Squared Radio. I want to go ahead and open the phone lines now. It's about we have about 11, 12 minutes before the end of this first hour, and we've done a good job of laying the foundation. If you want to be part of the program, and there are a variety of ways to do this. You can always call in the phone numbers. And if you're at xsquaredradio.com, they're right there on the cover. But if you're not at xsquaredradio.com, if you're listening on one of the affiliate radio programs and you don't have a laptop in your hands, but you have a steering wheel in your hands, then I'm going to give you the numbers. You can call 530-413-4511 if you are off planet. And it's rather safe out there right now. You can be out there a ways. Geomagnetic storms are at a minimum. You can call 530-413-4515 if you are west of Earth. All right? 530-413-4520. If you are east of Earth. Now, if you don't feel like calling in, but you want to duck out for a while during our three-hour live broadcast, you can do what thousands of others do. You can grab your iPhone or your Droid, and you can stick your Bluetooth on, and you can dial 712-432-0075, and then the access code 318-116-pound. If you do that, you can listen to the entire program on your Bluetooth. Now, I don't know if the conference is working right now. I haven't received but just one piece of mail from the person who counts the studio saying that the conference is having some problems, and they're trying to fix it. So if you're trying to get in on the 712 number, that's okay. It's not us. It's not us, it's the conference provider, but we're working on it. We know there are thousands of you that like to listen to the program that way. It's kind of a way to walk around the mall while you're listening to X Squared Radio with a glazed look over your face as you hold that DVD in your hands for a disproportionate amount of time in disbelief at what you are hearing here. But you can call the numbers, and we want you to participate in the program because we're live tonight on the 21st of May, 2011. Many of you think that this year is going by pretty quickly. I think it is. My goodness, it was just Christmas. I'm thawing out a turkey as we speak. I just can't believe how fast this year is going by. We're in the sixth year of X Squared Radio. BBS Radio is arguably the number one internet talk radio network in the world, not just the United States, but in the world now. And with upgraded capabilities and speed, you are receiving a crisp, clean program, and we want you to call in and be part of it. If you haven't checked out X Squared Radio lately, I highly suggest that you do so, because I have a brand new, wonderful assistant helping me with the website, Mr. Dylan. And all reports are saying that he has done a wonderful, wonderful job at revamping xsquaredradio.com. Take a visit to it. Listen to some of the archives. There's some video that runs with it. And yes, there are archives missing from March 27th until last week. And that's because I wasn't recording any. I was working on something secret. I can't tell you about it on the program tonight. But if you email me, I'll tell you. But I'm not going to discuss it on the open airwaves tonight. Just something to change the world. Nothing really important. So as is the custom here, I'm going to try and do this in logical order. So in the next hour, I'm going to take off on this. I just don't want to go entirely religious or slip and fall down in the dogma pile. You know what I'm talking about. So I will try to approach this thing that this phenomenon that seems to be gripping the world. I see entrepreneurs out there struggling every day, busting their knuckles and pulling their hair out by the roots, trying to solve problems, to come up with energy solutions, to come up with ways of doing things that people can afford, that are clean and renewable, and they can't scrape together $72. And yet some preacher can pound the pulpit and wave his hands and shake his voice and can raise $72 million convincing people that the world is going to end today. Well, he doesn't have much time. It's supposed to end at 6 p.m. 6 p.m. And it ain't going to make it. It's not going to make it. It's already 5:47 on the West Coast. So he's got 13 minutes, and then it's not like the world is going to end tomorrow, so we'll just carry on. So let's take the first thing first. No matter who you talk to or which scripture you read, there is one thing that could be considered first. The end of the world mainly consists of the separation of the physical body from the spirit. In other words, we're all going to die. The question is, are we going to die one at a time of natural causes in our sleep, or if our heart gives out, or, you know, we get hit by a car or die in a plane crash or a flood or an earthquake or a fire or blah, 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 whatever it takes to stop the biological processes, that's how we're going to die. Interesting. Well, before we talk about this in any depth, let's recap something. Well, we talked about this about 18 months ago. Many of you are now part of X Squared Radio and didn't hear this, so I'm going to repeat it, although not in as much depth. You can go back to the archives in 2010, and you can look up the subject on mortality, how we define mortality. Anyway, this way we might have an idea what it is that we're giving up. In the beginning of mortal life for each one of us, and I'm speaking in general terms, not in specific terms, those of you that have had your belly buttons painted on or added later, maybe this doesn't apply. But for the rest of us that spewed out amniotic fluid and gasped for our first breath as a biological transducer, this will apply. Being born. Wow, what an amazing process. To make the transition from a timeless, eternal, magnificent being of thought and imagination and anticipation and desire and love and hope to come coughing and shivering into this world, opening your eyes, blurry at first, not being able to reach for anything, everything. I mean, it takes months to discover one's foot, and that is an amazing discovery, but somewhere recently, behind that very primitive lens we call the brain, is a wise ancient being who has had his awareness or her awareness truncated down from the singularity of the universe to a drinking straw, a long one. It's kind of dark and blurry and a completely different language coming down of it. Here we are struggling to work this thing called the human body with all of its buttons and switches, and synapses aren't quite complete yet, and the bus system is weak, and it doesn't have enough voltage in it. It barely has enough horsepower to hold the thing up. It won't balance itself. It can't even control its own bowels. And by the time we figure it out, it's a couple of years, you know. Yeah, we're walking, but everything is so tall, and the bowel thing, we're, you know, finally we get a handle on it somewhere in the second year. And then, you know, language is a struggle for 10, 12 more years. Somewhere in there, a process, I call it stepping in. I don't know how to put it. It's like in the movie Being John Malkovich, when the marionette operator would step into John Malkovich's head, and he would see what John Malkovich sees, but through his eyes, well back, sort of like running back and forth between a couple of knot holes in a wall. But somewhere in the movie, the marionette operator actually steps fully into John Malkovich, actually puts his eyes right up to John Malkovich's eyes and becomes John Malkovich. In other words, the peripheral of the world, the meaning, the subtleties, the balance, the smells and the subtleties of the world become apparent. And become real enough to manipulate and to consider. That's adolescence. You know, whether that happens at age 9, which I can tell you most 8 or 9-year-olds or 10-year-olds are absolute tyrants. I mean, they're just total ego, driven by hunger, driven by environmental conditions, driven by whatever it is at the moment that individual ego wants without bridle. And depending on whether the parents of that child are patient or teaching or instructional or punishing, and I've seen plenty of those down at the Walmart, in between the people of Walmart are the parents of Walmart, yanking and yelling and threatening and don't touch that. Get over here. Be quiet. I don't get it. He's a kid. You took him to Walmart. He's going to pick up a toy. He's going to want a pack of gum. And the little candied necklaces are just too much to resist. You cannot yell like that. Stop it. Anyway, The point is that we enter this world willingly because we are an eternal being, vast and wise and experienced, and we have a very strong desire. And believe me, that desire is not to stay disembodied. It's not to stay out there playing a harp somewhere on a cloud. It's not to be timeless and without weight and without challenge. It isn't to know everything. What hell that must be to know everything. No mystery whatsoever. No movie unfolding before you. Even if you know the ending, there's the tendency to want to settle one's chin into the palms of the hands over the elbows on the cushion and to stare and to be and to feel and to be touched by one more time those incredible lines, those amazing eyes, to consider the art of what is done before you. There's none of that. Because as alive as you are, as this mental image of a being, you're dead. You feel nothing. You taste nothing. There is no pain. There is no pain. There is no joy. There is only rest. And rest, my friends, is okay when you need one. But the bad thing about loafing is you can't take a break. You're just out there. You're just done. And so we come of age, we step in, we become aware, and we begin to remember who we are. No, it's not an easy thing. Our parents, you know, have a name for us. They have a look for us, complete with hair and a body shape, which, you know, what is up with this? You know, my butt is big because your butt is big. My head is bald because your head is bald. That's not me in the mirror. Come on. I'm not that person at all. I look completely different than that. I remember. You'll see. You'll see. And at some point in your life, whether you're 15 or whether you're 55, you will begin to take your own steps. You will take your own leap from the leaf, and then no longer will you be the caterpillar. This is X Squared Radio, first hour gone, May 21st, 2011, and we will be right back. Take a short musical break. Listen to someone else's commercials if you want, because you won't get any here during the break. Just relax. Loosen your seatbelt a little bit. Recline your seat. Look out the window. We'll be right back with more X Squared Radio after this. welcome back to X Squared Radio. We're coming to you live from southern Mississippi tonight. Our AccuWindow forecast clear, cooling off. Just like we should do as we begin to think about this week. What are we going to do to change the universe? What are we going to do to relieve ourselves of the burdens that we carry? Wealth, debt, illness, jealousy, all those wonderful things that we come to this earth to experience. Those things that aren't out there, they're only here. In our previous hour, we were talking about the experience of becoming mortal, because it's important to know that if the world is going to end, what does that consist of? Does that consist of separating our spirit from our body? And if that's the case, what does that mean? What are we willing to hold on to here? Is there anything worth holding on to here? And the answer is a profound yes, there is. There is the experience of coming here, of stepping in, of remembering who we are, of taking our own steps, making our way to the edge of the leaf, taking a brief rest, changing around a few ordinary chemicals in our body as we add experience and love and challenge and scarcity and mystery. And then one day we break open and we dry off our wings and we step to the edge of the leaf and we jump. On our own, taking flight, being what it is we want to be. Now, some would say, well, we're just being what we were meant to be. You know, my father was a farmer, and I am a farmer. And my father was a machinist, and I'm a machinist. My father was a rocket scientist, and I am a machinist. My mother was a singer. And I have a bucket that's empty. All of those things, all of those challenges. And to consider that this is what it means for the world to come to an end. The opportunity to come here and crash. The opportunity to come here and take flight and crash land and get up and crash land again and again goes away. When the spirit leaves the body, there is a sense of loss. We've had Dr. Gary Schwartz on this program. He did the God experiment, and one of the things that he studied in this, you can go back and listen to it, I think it's late 2009, the spirit tries to hang around the body and emulate the last mortal experience for many years, maybe even decades, unless the being can release those that were left behind. If they can't release those that were left behind, which I would say, given most near-death experiences or experiencers that I've spoken to, that is the most profound and most powerful feeling is, oh my gosh, look who I've left behind. I left my children, my wife, my girlfriend, my boyfriend. I left my family, my parents. I left them behind, and so they stay. One of the studies, one of the subjects that Dr. Schwartz studied was John Edwards, you know, the one that had the TV show. John Edwards is extremely talented at what he does. And I am going to say that I'm going to accept it for face value that he actually does speak to the dead. And the reason I'm going to do that is just for purposes of what I'm going to talk about. I think if I were to believe anything, and I've said many times I don't believe much because I am a scientist, and I will believe for a while, I have faith for a while, and I will study it out in my mind or in experimentation. And when I come to the measure of proof, well, then there's no more need for belief. I mean, I know. And so knowledge replaces faith and belief, and I stand on that and move on and go to the next level, which is what we should be doing. If you're at the end of your life and you still have faith in God, you really have a problem, because at that point you need to have knowledge. I think you need to have knowledge, my friend. Faith is the hope, okay? Once you get the knowledge, you don't need that anymore. You don't have to wake up every morning and pray to know that Jesus is the Christ. That's done. That part's finished. You can move on to the next level up from there. Anyway, John Edwards contacts only the latest generation. The last generation never tells the present, those people in the audience or those people that have actually come to John Edwards for a reading, never tells the present generation about what is behind the veil. They never tell the present generation that they, the person who's dead, was once a priest or a cobbler or a fisherman in ancient times, that he lived in Atlantis or he lived in medieval Scotland or he lived in, you know, South America. There's never that. It's like, no, I'm your Uncle Joe. And before I was Uncle Joe, I don't mean to say anything about that because I'm on John Edwards' program. No, that's not it. John Edwards is listening to the dead. The dead who reach John Edwards simply don't say anything about a previous lifetime. It doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. It doesn't mean that they don't know that it exists. It just means that they're not telling John Edwards about it, or John Edwards is not telling us about it. And that's that. And this is just the statistical fact of the observation. So if the end of the world is the separation of the body from the spirit, because, I mean, after all, people, if you're dead, what are you going to care about, about what happens physically to your body or to anyone else's body for that matter? What is the big deal? Where is the fear in that? Why is May 21st, 2011 any different than September 21st or December 21st, 2012 or 2015 or 2025 or 2029? What is the fear? Why are we going to these preachers and dumping $20 bills into the little brass pan? It makes no sense. Now, we've laid that fear to rest. We understand what becoming mortal is about. We understand how valuable it is. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about that here at the end of this hour. We understand that if the end of the world is going to come and you are the unfortunate one that is at ground zero, that's it for you, okay? You're in the tsunami, you're in the earthquake, you're in the conflagration from the sun, you're in the avalanche, you're in the collapse of the building. That's it for you, okay? There's not going to be much you can do about that. Unless, of course, you were warned a couple of weeks before, you need to go visit your mom in Oklahoma. Okay, you need to get in the car and go visit the family down in South Carolina. Or you need to get on a plane and you need to go visit your family in Scotland. You should listen to those promptings. You don't get them very often. It's kind of like the family that got the prompting to leave their little town in Alabama. They were going to ride it out. I mean, they could see the storm on the TV, and what are the odds? I mean, hey, this house was my daddy's, and it was here in the 1800s, and it's not going to get hit now. But then the wife says, hey, let's go visit the folks up in Tennessee. Let's just go, like, now. And so they go out, and they get in the car, and they go. And when they come back at the end of the weekend, their house is gone. Nothing but a slab left behind. I'm sure the man looked at the woman, or the husband looked at the wife with the two kids asleep in the car seats in the back, and he said, thank you, baby. I get to see my kids grow up now. Those premonitions don't come too often. I suggest listening, unless you want to be at ground zero, and that could be an experience too. But now let's talk a little bit about the other end of this thing, okay? I'm not saying this is worth putting money in the brass pan either, but it's another consideration. If the end of the world is the end of this planet, then we really do need to have a moment of silence. I'm not saying a human life is worth any more or less than the planet Earth. But the human body, the human spirit, the eternal being inside of you is going to have lots and lots of chances. And to design yourself here and design yourself to a short or long life is 100% your choice. Planets, good planets, are hard to come by. The Earth is far more rare than we are. It is the finest jewel of creation in this galaxy. I'm convinced of that. So if you ever got the idea that Earth is a hell, then you have been taught a falsehood. This world is the finest gift of life in this part of the universe. The very best masters were involved in its creation. The plethora and sheer beauty of life that exists on this planet, in every void on it, in the ice, in the desert, in the sea, in the sky, in the mountains, on the beaches, in the valleys, in the jungles, even in the follicles of your hair, there is life. It is teeming and thriving and boiling on this world. It yearns for its balance and its presence. I suggest that you stop and look at it. And if you're tired of looking at the life around you, blackbirds or armadillos or rattlesnakes, take a summer, take a winter, and go see this world. Go to the rainforests of the Northwest and look at the tallest, oldest trees in the world. Get a cheap plane ticket and go to the Sahara and see what tropical paradise has become. Because that is the future of global warming. Swim in the Red Sea. Take the ferry between Scotland and Ireland. Take a cruise and look at the icebergs of the north. Surf the waves of Southern California. See the ocean of wheat and corn and soybeans, and look at the life that continuously blossoms across this nation, this world. See the colorful people, the colorful fabrics, and their colorful, beautiful children at 18,000 feet in the Himalayas or in the Sudan or in the Andes. It is the finest jewel of creation in the galaxy. This earth is not hell. This earth is not evil. The very best masters were involved in its creation, and the very best masters, including God, came here to have their mortal life. This is not hell. It may very well be a part of heaven. I know this because I've seen it myself. And if you think you're in hell, it's because you made it that way. Someone could come to your house or your place of work and turn that place into a heaven. That someone might as well be you. Now, if the end of the world means the end of this planet, and we have anything to do with it, one way or the other, then we should be about it. If we are the cause of it, then we should wake up and do what it takes to save it. If there is something we can do to save it, then we should wake up and do what it takes to save it. If there is something we are not doing that is causing it to end, then we should wake up and do it. So when these preachers and profiteering prognosticators push the idea that the world is going to end unless you join their church, we should scarcely nod in acknowledgement and move along. Share no energy with that at all. There is a reason why there are 7 billion of us here on this earth. We can agree on some things, you know. We can join consciousness and create a world of peace and prosperity for everyone, you know, without overpopulating or overconsuming the planet. And if there is a danger of either, then we need to seriously think about moving a colony to another world. Because we will consume this world down to the last scrub of a weed. And then it will watch us die, like any society that reaches the end of resources. Or we need to think about the rate of growth we have here and level out the population so that each person will have a space and food and water. We can't use it all up as long as we can grow it or process it. Once we get past the capacity of the land or the air or the water, the planet will let us die. We can change that. German physicist and one of the founding fathers of quantum theory, my good buddy Max Planck, said that all matter originates and exists only by virtue of a force which brings the particles of an atom to vibration, which holds the atom together. We must assume behind this force is the existence of a conscious and intelligent mind. This mind is the matrix of all matter. In other words, the substance of the universe, of your reality, our average reality, may be nothing more than consciousness or thought. You think we live in a hell? Thank you very much. Because now I got to find another person that thinks we live in heaven to counteract your hell so we can have an average reality somewhere in between, like Malcolm in the Middle. If I can find 2 or 3 to your 1, I can offset your heaven and raise you to offset your hell and raise you 2 heavens. And the average will be something like Iowa. But I've been better places than that. And maybe you have, maybe you have not. Been better places than that. I have seen heaven on this planet. I have heard it with my own ears. I've held it in my hands. I've felt it against my cheek. I watched it smile. I heard it laugh. I've raised it in my hands to the sky. I've swam with it in the water, ridden with it on bicycles, laughed with it at supper time, enjoyed a pie, a movie, or a walk around the block. I saw a wonderful, spectacular moonrise over the Gulf of Mexico on Tuesday evening. Boats weren't even swaying in a picturesque mirror of a bay. All kinds of pastel colors frozen, ripple-free, with nothing but an almost gray, almost starry sky as a backdrop mirrored in the water. It was heaven. I was there. I saw it. Consciousness forms the building blocks of the universe, and everywhere that consciousness explores, with the expectation that something will be there, it also creates. The expectation of our observation, what is over that wall? What is out there in the blackness of space? What is in between those two protons? Our observation, our consciousness makes this happen. And where there is one, it is an amazing observation. Where there are two, as the master once told us, if we can agree on it, anything, anything is possible. The great master came to this earth not to spread his wings, not to mount his throne or crack his whip over our heads. It wasn't to tell us of his divinity. No, not at all. It was to tell us of our divinity. It was to tell us we are the creators. So if you live in hell, you created it. And you can plow it up and you can replant heaven. If quantum theory is correct, it implies that to change your current reality, all you need to do is change the frequency of your thoughts. Thank you, Max Planck. Let me repeat that one more time so that you don't have to hit your rewind button. You don't have to hit your TiVo. You don't even need to let go of your steering wheel. Hold on. If quantum theory is correct, and I assure you it is at least mostly correct, it implies that to change your current reality, all you need to do is change the frequency of your thoughts. This is precisely why two people can kiss. One is in the bliss, and the other is looking at his watch, or her watch. Change the frequency of your thoughts. It works fine for one person at a time. You could do it. You could do it. You can go to a workshop. You can take counseling. You can meditate. You can dance. You can listen to music. Change your music. You can change your car. You can change your house. Sell your house. Become homeless. Buy a home or not. Walk on the beach, hike in the mountains, in the snow or the rain or the sunshine. It makes no difference. Change your frequency of your thoughts. and your reality will change. Paul, Mr. Ruiz, who wrote The Four Agreements, he writes a story about the magic kitchen. He talks about a woman who would come to the door, and some man would come to her door and knock on the door, and she would answer, and he would say, be part of my life, and I will give you everything that you need. I will give you food. I will make you great pizza. And all she needs to say is, but I have a magic kitchen, and I can make my own pizza. I don't need to relinquish my sovereignty to you, my friend. I can make my own. That's what you need to do. And if you're driving to work on Monday morning and you're listening to this while you're working on your assigned project, I was going to say your favorite project, but chances are if you're at work, you're not working on your favorite project. You're working on something for which you have a deadline. But nevertheless, your earbuds are in or your headphones are on and you are listening to this program. And your frequency is changing. But before this, you arrived and you opened your car door and leaned over and vomited in the parking lot. And while wiping the spittle from your lips and combing your hair, you headed for the time clock. And now you are warming your chair and doing that for which you have been paid some contract per hour to do what it is you do in hell. Then you need to change your frequency. Decide. The responsibility that keeps you in that chair is a good thing. Don't give up your duty, my friends. Be the dad. Be the mom. Don't bail out on any of that. But realize that you're going to bring heaven to that workplace. You're going to bring heaven to that AutoCAD station. You're going to bring heaven to that engineering room. You're going to bring heaven to that assembly line. Or to that classroom, because you're going to change your frequency. You're going to come to work in an elevator. Yeah, you'll get out of the same car in the same parking lot before you walk in. You're going to take the elevator up a couple floors, and you're going to bring something higher into that place, a knowledge that you know that the world didn't end on May 21st, 2011. In fact, it's not going to end at all because you helped create it. And you're not going to walk down that path, the one that's been mapped out for you in the past in black and white and red. You're not going to walk down that path. You've already seen that future. You've already heard that story, that result. Splitting mountains and clouds and crowns and melting eye sockets. You already know that story. We're going to write a new one. 2012, everything's going to change because you're going to plan for it and you're going to do it. You're going to support it. Hey, I forgot to tell you, the phone lines are open. I've been kind of rambling. Not really. I've been focused on one thing, trying to raise this frequency and let you know that I'm not talking about it from an esoteric point of view, but rather a quantum physics point of view, that your observation has an effect on the very radioactive decay upon which we once relied as a mainstay for all timing in the universe. Well, it's now shifting. It's now changing. Yeah, we've seen some variation in it, and we don't really know why. We just know that it's happening. We know that we're measuring it. We have reports now from various observers who also predicted that the world was going to end, that there's been a strange change in the unfolding of this particular future. Points of light, points of creative light out there scattered around the population of Earth are changing the equation, changing the function. And so what was once a future calculation is now anybody's guess, because you are empowered. You have changed the universe, and it is changing before your eyes and before my eyes. Phone numbers, if you want to be part of the program, 530-413-4511 if you are off planet. And believe me, we do get some phone calls on that line. Hey, I also wanted to remind you that if you're listening and you're an alien, and by alien I mean you weren't born on this world, okay? You are not born on Earth. You're a visitor, or you're an arrival, a late arrival, from some other means than being born here. You traveled here. That's my definition of an alien. Yes, many of us were born here and we're not from here, and we recognize that and we're coming to terms with it day by day. But I'm specifically talking about those of you that came by artificial means instead of natural means. You have an open invitation here on this program, okay? We will not reveal your location, but I am very open to listening to your point of view, to asking you some questions about where you came from, why you're here, where you think we're going, why is it so interesting here. I want to let you know, rest assured, you are safe here. You will not be attacked. You'll not be obfuscated in any way, nor will I doubt the validity of your words. I will leave that doubt up to the listener. So if you have the ability to understand what I'm saying, and even more, you have the courage to come here, please do so, 530-413-4511. The rest of you, 530-413-4515 if you are west of Earth, and 530-413-4520 if you are east of Earth. My apologies for the conference line. The studio in California has added a new T1 line. That means that although the studio is located in beautiful downtown Paradise, California, it has the bandwidth of a 20-story building. That's why we're so crisp and so clear here with you tonight. BBS Radio is by far the number one internet talk radio network on the web anywhere in the world. And X Squared Radio is the number one and sometimes number two program on that network. We appreciate you being with us. And if you are a listener to X Squared Radio and you have aspirations of being a talk radio personality yourself, you can do so. Contact me by email on the website. You can easily do that. Just hit the contact button. It goes right to your email. And write me with what your ideas are, what you want to be when you grow up, as with respect to being a talk radio host. And I will sponsor you to become a host on X Squared Radio. It's not a big process, but you'll get a little bit of a discount and get to prove your mettle. It's not free, but it's worth it if you have what it takes. Give me a write, drop me a line, and I'll be happy to give you your launch. Our conference line, however, because we have added the T1 line and now we are wrestling with various codes and interfaces, does not seem to be working tonight. Still, I want you to put this number in your speed dial. Call it BBS Radio or call it X Squared Radio if you like. It is 712-432-0075, and then there is a passcode 318-116-POUND. If you dial this number, you can listen to X Squared Radio live Sunday nights between 5 and 8 p.m. Pacific, or you can listen to any one of the other hosts on BBS Radio Network. They're open almost 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And then we're there. Bunch of texts, blah, 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 blah. Okay, I read all that. All right, let's go to the phones because, well, I have one more commercial I want to run here just really quick. If you've read the book, Remembering the Future, the Physics of the Soul and Time Travel, you will note on the website and mentioned in the book is a CD, an audio CD that goes with this. Maureen St. Germain makes this CD. It's called the Merkaba 2 Meditation CD. It is the audio script, the walkthrough of the meditation. You can read the book. You can get the hand mudras. You can understand about the Merkaba and how it moves. And you can get the CD to go with it, and you can practice. I recommend practicing 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks, somewhere in there. And then go to MaureenSaintGermain.com, M-A-U-R-E-E-N, Saint, that's S-T, Germain.com. Her link is also at the website. And take a class from her. She is one of the most advanced Flower of Life meditation instructors. You'll get all your questions answered, everything that you've been doing wrong, all the little mistakes that we make doing, and the meditation will work for you. And she's very affordable. She's my master teacher, and I strongly support her, MaureenSaintGermain.com. Okay, to the phones. Let's see. First, let's take Scott on line one. Scott, welcome to the program.
Hi, Dr. Brooks. I just wanted to add something to your discussion this evening that's been working for me. I've started to do more writing, as in, congratulations on your screenplay, by the way.
Writing it
a personal way in terms of mapping my own future and the course that it will take. And it's not really a difficult technique where I just sit down basically for a few minutes each week and plot out what I want, what I'm in a sense authorizing to happen in my life for the next week.
You know, I highly recommend that because you know what it does? It kind of slows down the thoughts, which are kind of like ping pong balls in a whirlwind sometimes. It slows down that thought and it comes out at the speed of writing. And it really helps you focus. I really support that idea.
And it's taken me a while to come to this technique because for a while I've been meditating for about 23 years and going to workshops and so on and so forth. And I kept getting this message back from, I've been working with Galexis through the years and they had a BBS radio show for a while, but you know, now you can go to their website and look at what they're up to, but the feedback I would often get was take your power back and be the authority. And I said, okay, now how can I do that in a tangible way? And being a writer, that seems to work where I'm authorizing authority as an author, authorizing the reality to take a particular shape based on the essence that I put in whatever I'm writing. For example, I'll focus on the passion, the fun, the healing, the you know, whatever it is that I want to see happen this particular week at work. And I've noticed that it's not a fail-safe technique because sometimes things will come up. Like this last week, something came up that brought up more like childhood stuff where others were the authority, where my parents were the authority and that sort of thing. But then I realized what was going on. Is that this is something, you know, once you make that choice to move on, to move to a higher level, then stuff is going to come up.
Sure, and, yeah. You're going to release. And once you release, then what you've done is you've allowed other things in the set of the universe to vibrate. It's sort of like holding on to the bell. It just won't ring as long as you're holding on to it. But once you let it go, once you release that stuff, then the bell will ring and other things will vibrate and you'll see all kinds of things come to fruition in your life.
And also by another technique I'd like to share is by sitting down for a minute or two and imagining myself 2 weeks from now, looking back on me now in the present moment, and the things turned out better than I was expecting in this regard or in that regard. Let's say there was a meeting that I was not looking forward to, or let's say this week looks so stressful that how in the world is it all going to pan out and work together in a cohesive manner? And by taking that moment to leap ahead in time, to look back at me now with a sense of relief and with a sense of, hey, I grew in this way, or this happened to work out and I didn't think it was, and I thought these two things that I scheduled were going to be in conflict with one another, and you know.
Yeah, that wasn't so bad, was it? That was like, that wasn't so bad. I didn't think that. That's one of my favorite techniques. I thought I was the only person that did that. That's amazing.
Which helps, because sometimes I tend to brood on the weekends and think, oh gosh, what's going to come this next week? What are the challenges I will be facing? But by the same token, if I didn't have those challenges, I would probably be bored and I would not be growing. It's important for me to continually move forward. And, you know, I was just thinking tonight, for years, ever since, I was a Star Trek fan at age 5 when it came out first time in 1966. And I've been, in a way, connecting with my creativity through drawing spaceships. I would draw Star Trek. I would draw Lost in Space. I would draw Land of the Giants, Time Tunnel, and all the others that were going on in the 60s. And anything I could get my Doctor Who, anything that I could get my hands on, I would want to draw and do the blueprints on them and so on and so forth. People say, well, you should work for NASA. But I was just thinking tonight, NASA isn't there yet. They're not designing what I'm designing right now.
Yeah, they should hire fiction writers at NASA. Then we'd have a much more interesting space program.
Well, I hope that that it can move to a higher level. You know, we've been with the shuttle technology now for some time. I almost went to see Endeavour launch 3 weeks ago when it was first set to launch, but that was canceled. But
I went over to the Stenosphere Tuesday and watched a Saturn IV test, so I got my fix.
Oh, okay.
Well, listen, really appreciate the call, Scott, as sure. I always do. I got a couple of the callers on the line. Thank you much. I'm going to be down
Have
your way
night.
Weekend.
Okay, bye.
All right, bye-bye. Okay, we have Diane on line 2. Welcome to the program, Diane. Oh, she didn't hang up. Well, we'll have to call back because I really missed Diane. I wanted to be part of the program. Here in a second. Ah, there we go. Now we're back. Okay, so we'll invite Diane to call back. Sorry about making her wait, but we try to give every caller a good period of time. And Scott is a deep thinker, and we really appreciate his contributions when he comes on the program. I really do use that technique of putting myself out in the future and looking back. I've taught it to my kids too when they have a test coming up. Just put yourself out in the future and look back at the test, and you'll see it wasn't as bad as what you thought. It isn't the end of the world. Oh, gee, we're into the end of the world jokes now here on May 21st, 2011. Just because
I'm breaking in here, I do apologize. Forgive me. I had to step out for an emergency, and I was gone. I'm looking at these graphs. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I wish I didn't step out, but then I did, and unfortunately, we got caught. So I apologize.
Well, that's all right.
Well, now people realize why there should always be a live engineer. Always during a live call-in program. I mean, you need to have the live service. Otherwise, hey, things go wrong, and they'll go wrong anyways, unfortunately. We love you, Brooks. Keep going. I'll say adieu to your audience and get the next caller.
I should have known that you were going to take a break, and I should have kept Scott on a little bit longer. That's just the way it goes. I love internet radio. It's just where stuff happens. It's so real. You never hear stuff like this on regular broadcast radio. This makes it a lot more fun. Okay, Diane from Michigan, she's now on with us. Hello, my friend. How are you, Diane?
How are you, Brooks? I haven't called you for a long, long time.
I know. I've been hurt, but I knew you were out there.
No, don't be hurt. I just wanted to call you to tell you how you extrapolate the stories of fact and what you feel is fiction, and what the topic today is just incredible, of the people believing in these leaders that have all these followers.
It is kind of amazing, isn't it?
It certainly is. And the way that you go on about what was then, what is now, and what can be is just, I never miss a program of yours. Never. I don't call in as often as I used to, but, I never miss a program.
Well, that means a lot to me. That's why I'm out here, and I do apologize not having the archives on the last 6 weeks. But you know, I've been working on this top secret project, and it's almost done. We're getting ready to ship it, and once it's out on the water,
and you know what? I can't wait to hear all about it. I cannot wait to hear all about it. You know, our meeting at East Seti Ranch was just so phenomenal, and with you and your wife, and it was just absolutely incredible. And you know, my whole story of how I got there the second time, but the first time, and that I went in 2008 where I first met you, that's where the angel came to me, and tonight's program just brought all that back to me as a result of the fact that we are living in heaven, and this planet is just absolutely incredible and wonderful, and I have had the very extreme pleasure and opportunity, and I feel so so blessed that I have been able to travel to Egypt and around the world since my husband has left, who crossed over in 2006, and in 2008 when I went to East Seti Ranch, that's where I met the angel. And after talking to James and what he told me and what she had told me and why my husband had to leave was just absolutely phenomenal.
Well, I think it's incredible, too. You know, James has got a couple of events. He's got one coming up June 24th. There's a special event. This is a new group of speakers. These are new world-renowned speakers that are coming. We're going up there.
Michael Tellinger's going to be there.
Yep. We've had him on the program. He's a great interview. He should have a great presentation. And then in August, we're also going to have the Earth Transformation Conference. So we will all be back up there again in August. And that's good. And then don't forget, in December 21st, of this year is the first Pythagoras conference, and this one's in Louisville, Kentucky now.
Yes.
It's neat because we're having one in the Midwest, finally. We don't have to travel all the way to the coast to have a great conference.
The only problem I have with that, Brooks, is the fact that that conference is the most expensive conference I've ever been to.
Well,
I've been to hundreds of conferences.
I have good news. If you go to the conference or you register for the conference.
The expense is just way over the top for me.
I know. I'm saying July 8th. July 4th. Between now and July 4th, it's buy one, get one free. So it's half price. Two people go for the price of one. And we are working on the cost. As you know, these conventions can be rather pricey. This one is at the Galt House. The Galt House now. This is not a warehouse on an old fairgrounds. This is the best hotel in all of Louisville. So this is, you know, the best speakers and the best hotel. It should be quite the experience. But still, we want to try to do everything we can do to bring the cost down. And it's so well organized. They've done such a good job of bringing the very best speakers together in the Midwest, for crying out loud. That's
well, you know, I've been to a couple of them in the Midwest now, and the thing I have a problem with is, you know, we don't need to have the best to have the best information brought to us. I mean, there's many of us that look at this and we don't need to have, you know, the best day or the best the best hotel, so forth and so on. And I go to many conferences, Brooks, and I have never ever seen a conference at this price. Now that you said this, I'm glad that you said this is two for one. That helps out, but even at that, it's just, you know, I know many people in my group, they wanted to go, and they said, you know, we can't afford that.
Yeah, I understand. Well, I'm going to pass that along to the. To the owners. In fact, I will play your tape for this. So that's important.
Well, I appreciate it, but I want to thank you tonight for this program because it's really helped me out. It's been 5 years now since my husband has crossed over. I still live with it on a daily basis, but it's getting easier, and this program has really helped me out a lot.
Well, I appreciate that so much, and I'm here because you're out there listening. I think of you all listening.
Thank you, Brooks, and have a great evening, and say hello to your wife for me.
I'll do that. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Well, we're right at the top of the hour, and I've got a break in the call, so I think I'm going to go ahead and take the break now. Don't forget about those events. We have the one coming up June 24th. There is still room at this conference, and plane fare is inexpensive, and the weather is going to be phenomenal, phenomenal. I highly recommend that you make your way up there. This is UFO activity like you're not going to see, nor have you seen before, if you haven't been up there before. And then again in August, and I think if you go to the eSETI.org website, you will find out when in August the Earth Transformation Conference is taking place. And then, I feel what you're thinking about the Pythagoras Conference December 21st. This is a monumental effort that's being put forth by Sandra Sabatini and Richard Smith, and they're really, really working hard on it, and they're really, really doing a good job of marketing, and the quality of the speakers is like you won't see quality like this at many conferences. We are working on the cost, and believe me, those of you that have already registered, if we do get the cost down, you're going to see some kind of refund coming back. All this stuff has its influence, but I promise you're not going to regret it if you come. So let's go ahead and take a quick break. If you like Civil Twilight, I don't know if you do or not. If you've listened to this program, you've heard them a few times. Most impressive are the lyrics. If you saw the movie I Am Number 4, you will recognize this song right away as the ending song of the movie. We'll be back after about 3 minutes. Hang in there. Letters from the Sky.
Made for this. I was made to taste your kiss. We were
We don't have to be scared. You're coming back for me. Now I'm coming back for you. Final hour of X Squared Radio, May 21st, 2011, coming to you live from southern Mississippi. Our AccuWindow forecast, quite cool tonight. Very nice. Good night for a motorcycle ride, I think. Two-wheel meditation. Those of you that have read the book, Remembering the Future, the Physics of the Soul and Time Travel, you know there's a little zen to riding a motorcycle. Like the Buddha once said, one need only put their foot on the path to be at their destination. Like Scott was saying earlier, you put yourself a couple of weeks out in the future and look back at this event, and you can see what you learned or what you didn't learn at this juncture in your existence on the earth. Going forward with the energy of gratitude, I think, also helps. When you're getting ready to take on a challenge, you're getting ready to hook something up and make it work for the first time, have gratitude that it already works. And, there are going to be those that are fearful around you, and there are going to be those that wonder, you know, if it's going to go, if it's going to fly, if it's going to be successful, if it's going to go. But if you move forward with that gratitude and that energy is quite a bit different than the dark energy of doubt. Have no doubt, nothing wavering. And don't worry, because the world isn't going to end today. It isn't going to end in 2019 or 2025 or 2026. It may change because you have been participating in the change that is going to make a change. You've been adding to the energy of what it is that's going to make it happen. I suggest that we choose a different path. You know, it's written, many are called, but few are chosen. I profoundly think this is a misinterpretation. This is a mistranslation, because there's nobody out there doing the choosing. You are doing the choosing. And so to rewrite this properly, it should be, many are called, but few choose. Many are called, but few get off the porch and do something about it. Okay, in this hour, final hour, we've got about 45 minutes in this hour. I want to remind you that the phone lines are open and anything can happen in the third hour of X Squared Radio. If you are off planet, and I do want to remind any aliens that if you have the need to communicate with the world, this is a great place to do it. It's a great audience, and we have a great format for which you can do it. You can do it right here because we have a special phone number for you. It's 530-413-4511 if you are off planet or recently from off planet. If you are from west of Earth, 530-413-4515, and east of Earth, 530-413-4520. My apologies that the conference line is not working. Normally it would be working at 712-432-0075 with the passcode 318-116#. That's important because you can listen to the program without really, you know, being able to interrupt us. So you don't have to worry about listening to it on your Bluetooth while you're driving or while you're walking at the mall. You don't have to worry about those extraneous noises coming in because it's a listen-only line. A couple other things. We want you to visit xsquaredradio.com. It's important. It's important because on the cover of xsquaredradio.com, on the right-hand side, you will see our very most important banners. Now, I know you're banner blind, but we really did a good job, okay? This webmaster did a fantastic job. If you roll over the banners, they become bright. Okay, it's a rollover effect, so you can tell when you're rolling over that banner. I want you to go to a couple of ones of importance. So first one I want you to go to is, I want you to go Remembering the Future, The Physics of the Soul and Time Travel. If you do not own this book, you should click on this and you should order the book. Now, there are a couple reasons why you should order it from here. Because if you go to this website and you order it, on your checkout, you will receive a link that gives you the audio version of the book for free. That's right. It's my gift to you. In a few days, you will receive the autographed copy of the book from me directly. So those are some bonuses that you get if you order from this website. Yes, you can buy it anywhere where fine books are sold online, because I refuse to pay the book insurance so that you can buy it on the bookshelf. Truth be known, online sales are now about 60% of all books sold, so we don't have to be actual hard copy at your local Barnes & Noble store. It is also available in Kindle and Nook and as an ebook. So in Kindle, it's very cool because I just love Kindle. It's just an amazing, amazing reader. I see people on the airplanes with them all the time. Amazing that you can carry all those books around in something so thin with such a readable screen. All the pictures, however, are in black and white, either in the printed version or on Kindle. The pictures, I took the liberty of taking all the illustrations and all the pictures from the book, and I put them free on the website. So if you bought the book and you want to see the pictures in color, like my illustrations, go to the website. They're right there for you. You can read them, no problem. And the next one I want you to click on is the Pythagoras Conference. Get ready for it, because it's coming. And those are the only two things I want to push here in the last hour. So let's go back to the phones. We have Larry from Pennsylvania on line one. Welcome to the program, Larry.
Yes, good evening, Brooks.
How are you, sir?
Very good. And you, I take it also.
Yes, Mississippi. Well,
I think possibly I'm calling from the future.
Ah, very good. I like this. It's a little garbly, but the future can be that way. What's up in the future?
You keep referring to today as May 21st. I'm in May 22nd.
I'm looking at my computer time here. Yeah, it does say May 22nd. Well, I am in the past.
Well, maybe you need to raise
your love internet radio. I love internet radio.
That's all I had. I didn't know if I was in the future or you were in the past, but I think we cleared that up.
Well, we did have a broadcast from the year 2015 one time, and almost everything that we predicted on that program for 2009 took place. I thought that was pretty cool. Anyway, what's up in Pennsylvania, Larry?
It's pretty quiet here right now. We survived yesterday.
Yesterday was a bad day for weather?
No, everyone was expecting to be transformed to another planet, I think.
Well, we were. It just looks like our old one.
Well, that could be a good thing.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking that, you know, we can hit Control-Alt-Delete anytime we want. We have the mechanisms set up to do it. We just have to decide what new program we want to load. If we want to keep playing the same old political record over and over again and have the same complaints at the company water fountain, then we just need to stay the course. But if we're frustrated and tired at spending 50 times, 100 times, 1,000 times as much killing one another as we are exploring our planet and our space around us, then I think we can do that. I think we have the ability to change course.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I agree, and thank you for entertaining me here for a few moments.
Well, I appreciate it. I appreciate it. So how do the people in Pennsylvania feel? Do they think we should drill our way out of this problem, or do they think that new forms of energy and using that energy are probably the solution for the future?
Well, if they would allow us to use the new forms of energy, but most of the people I talk to think it's a shame that we don't take advantage of the resources we have.
Well, when it comes to the regulatory agencies and departments and administrations, it's a little like going to the bank and applying for that loan. They don't say no. They just never say yes. So that's kind of what it's like. But we're getting there. We're getting there. It's I think those kinds of technologies are out there, and hopefully there's the ones that do make it, I hope they don't step on the toes of too many people, because a lot of these things have been patented. They're just hidden away in nooks and crannies and shelves and attics and basements. And somebody's going to go into manufacturing with the darn thing, and then that's going to be an infringement on somebody's patent, and that's going to not be a happy day. So, you know, we'll just see how it works out. But one thing's for sure, Larry, the public wants it. And if the public wants it, they're going to get it.
Well, then I'm sure we will. It's just when that will happen.
Well, I will admit it's a little easier to get away with a little baggie of green leafy substance than it is to get away driving an electric car. But it can be done. There are mayors and governors willing to look the other way. So how do you feel about the VMT, the vehicle mileage tax, because people have responded to the efforts of all the advertising, driving more fuel-efficient cars, they're now doing that. They're buying fuel. And in buying less fuel, they're paying less tax. And the states are crying for mercy. And so the federal government is trying to add the vehicle mileage tax to try to recoup the revenue stream that they've lost because people are getting 30 miles to the gallon instead of 20 miles per gallon. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, of course, I'm not for that, but the ways they can dream up to create new taxes is endless.
It does seem kind of endless, although I kind of see the logic. I mean, I always liked to get tax as long as the money that was being raised by each gallon of gas was used to maintain another mile of road. I mean, it's a use tax, right? People don't pay taxes on their income to take care of roads because we're collecting the tax off of the fuel. The problem I have is that the bureaucracy that handles that money wastes about 40 cents a dollar. In other words, it takes about 40 cents to process each dollar of that gas tax because it's at the federal level. So if we did do a vehicle mileage tax, but we did it on the state level where it was much more efficient, I'd probably be for it because the vehicles that are generating the wear and tear on the roads are exactly the vehicles that should be paying for those roads. Don't you agree?
Yes, I agree with that. One of us is dropping out here a little bit and losing some of the conversation.
Well, that's because I am in the third world country of southern Mississippi. And Comcast has the worst voiceover internet in the country. And I hope they heard me say that so that they will finally fix it. So I appreciate you coming on the phone, Larry. Thanks for bringing me back up to the future.
You're quite welcome. Thank you.
You're welcome. Good night.
Good night.
Well, I guess it's about time for a couple more people in the city of Hattiesburg to be streaming some kind of video on the one cable line that comes to this town. Because now my internet connection is beginning to get a little spotty, and you might have a hard time understanding me. And that's just the way it goes here in the second world country of southern Mississippi. I assure you that I have the fastest internet connection available in the city. About three quarters of a mile of this highway is on the same internet connection, and this is what we get. In the last half hour of the program, what I want to address is the space shuttle program coming to the end of its life. Some of the questions are, what does this mean? I mean, does this mean the end of manned space flight? It probably does for the United States. Other countries will be going into space. They will have space for human participants, and we will be hitching a ride with them. How do you feel about that? You can call in and let me know. Many people have asked the question in the last 10 years and in the last 5 years very intensely, are we going back to the moon? You know, at one time there was a race. We called it the space race because nations were racing against each other to see who was going to put a colony on the moon. We had still two more launch engines. They were fully built, fully paid for, ready to go to the launch pad. Crews were trained. Assets were allocated. These craft were ready to launch, two of them. And all of a sudden, we stopped. We stopped the space program overnight. Well, to this day, the conspiracy theories abound. Everything from aliens telling us, stay the heck home, you're not welcome, don't come back, to, you know, we were about to discover a base on the other side of the moon, that a secret military base that we'd had there since World War II, and NASA was being ordered to stand down. Every kind of conspiracy theory that you can think of. I don't know if any of that's true, but I'd love to talk about it. So if you want to, you can call in and we'll talk about it. Now it seems that we have another race going on. We have the United States, we have Russia, we have Japan, and we have China, all looking at the moon. Somebody somewhere along the line is going to announce, hey, by the way, next Monday we're launching a colony to the moon. We're going to put a can on the moon, and we're going to start digging into the side of one of the large craters there, something with a 500, 600-foot wall. We're going to dig back into it, and we're going to build a base that's impregnable. I mean, we can withstand anything except a very large meteor. What are the odds of that? The moon is so tiny. And it will also be able to protect the occupants against solar radiation outside the magnetosphere, or outside the Van Allen radiation belts. We are quite vulnerable to high-energy protons coming through. And believe me, no spacesuit is going to be able to stop those kinds of particles. If it did, you couldn't wear it. And if we had a capsule that could withstand it, we couldn't launch it from Earth. We'd have to build it in space. But once we got to the moon, we could take a boring machine and bore back into the side of one of these craters, something 500 or 600 feet deep, although at ground level of one of the craters. We could dig back in for a couple thousand feet, and then all we really have to do is use the soil and the water that we find and generate our own oxygen. Within a few months, we could have a habitat that you could walk around inside with no protection whatsoever. You could, you would be at 1/6 gravity, but you'd still be able to lift enough to keep yourself in shape to be able to come back to Earth. and you'd be protected from any kind of solar radiation. Now, the nice thing about setting up a colony like this is you have all the raw materials that you need with the right heavy equipment taken up there. You have all the raw materials that you need to make everything you need. You could make titanium beams. You could make aluminum ingots. You can make and all of this at low gravity, so it's very easy to handle. You've got unlimited power, literally 28 days of direct sunshine, so you can have all the solar power that you need. You would have H3 at your disposal, so if you built an H3 reactor, you could have all the electricity, all the heat, all the power that you need to make any kind of chemical reactions. And literally within 10 or 20 years, we could have a sizable colony on the moon. We could have a launch facility on the moon. Why is this powerful? My goodness, being 250,000 miles out in a low gravity situation with no atmosphere to mess with, we've got the ability to launch where here we would launch maybe a quarter of a million pounds, 250,000 pounds of stuff. Up there, we could launch nearly 2 million pounds of payload into space with the same amount of energy. Just the launch, the lift capabilities are unlimited almost. So the good thing is that it also puts us out a ways from the Earth so we get a better perspective of space. We could have better telescopes, better surveillance. We could have a better early warning system of things that are out in space coming to Earth. We could also have, the ability to monitor Earth without having to orbit Earth, per se. Once every 24 hours, we're looking at the entire, side of the planet. We're not going around the planet two or three or six times a night or a day, like the International Space Station goes around the Earth about 11 times a day. That's a lot of sunrises and sunsets, and the route is rather predictable, and you're not going to hide from the moon. The moon is up, goes around every 28 days, so you've got a great perspective of the Earth all the time that the moon is up. It's never not facing the Earth, and the same side of the moon faces the Earth all the time, so you don't have to worry about not being able to look at the Earth. Another question is, are we hoping to poke around another planet with our probe out there and our Kepler probe and hoping that whomever lives on it will come to see us? Because obviously the Kepler probe's out there. It's not really getting close to these worlds, but it is scanning for these worlds and it is finding, 100 times more than what we could find our old way, which was the perturbation way. We'd look at the star, because you can't really see the planet. We'd look at the star and see how it was being tugged around by the planets orbiting it, and that's how we found the several hundred planets that we found. Some we're calling M-class planets. These are ones that are in the sweet spot orbit around the sun, not too hot and not too cold enough where liquid water can exist. And if liquid water can exist, then you have the basis for life, and that's a pretty important thing. Without it, it makes it very difficult. However, we're not making contact with these worlds. They don't really know we're out there scanning them from a distance because it's kind of a receive-only kind of observation. We're just taking in the light from the star and then making our measurements from there. So I don't know that, we'll be able to ring anybody's doorbell and have them come out to our ship and say, oh, we know where this one came from. It came from Earth. Here's the postcard. So they follow the return address and come and visit us. Do we have enough space exploration left in us as a people to return to the moon and build a base there? Now, that's a great question, people. I would like to hear the answer if any of you out there would like to contribute. We've got about 23 minutes left in the program. It's a good time to slide in and make a note. That's a good question. A lot of people thought in the early 70s when we stopped the moon program that we stopped it because Congress had lost its will to explore. The great inspirational force for exploration, John F. Kennedy, was assassinated in the summer of 1963. The space program carried on another 9 years or so. But subsequent presidents have a way of taking what was once a very strong budget with the world's greatest brain trust ever put together and reallocating it, putting it toward other things like, well, important stuff like slaughtering people in jungles halfway around the world. That's important, too. And then the space program just kind of lost its sex. You know how that goes. I don't know. We know everything that can be known already. Come on, we have digital watches now. We have pocket calculators. How much more do we need to know? You know, how much more do we need to do? I mean, get serious, people. What benefits have we had from this silly space program anyway? What do we get? The ballpoint pen? I don't know. Come on. You know better. Those of you that listen to this program know everything from the microchip to the cell phone to the laptop to microsurgery was developed as a product of the space program. We are still realizing technology that we learned, that we cut our teeth on in the space program. That's the reality of it. And we've only just scratched the surface. All we've brought home are a few rocks. By the way, in the news, a woman has been arrested for trying to sell a moon rock for a lot of money. I think it was something like $1.5 million. The reason they're arresting her is because... Yes, I know. This is really going to make you mad. Mad enough, I hope, to call. But there's a federal law against selling moon rocks. Yes, it's true. You can't sell them. Because if it's from the moon, it belongs to us. That's right. It already belongs to us. And if it's out there, somebody stole it. And you can't sell stolen materials. Like trying to sell a Picasso. It's like trying to sell a Rembrandt, okay? It's already owned by the federal government. So there's no way out for this poor woman. She's not going to get the $1.5 million for the moon rock because if it's genuine, she's going to prison. And if it's not genuine, she's going to prison for fraud. Now get that. Unbelievable. Believe it or not, the person that was going to give the money for the moon rock, wouldn't you know it, was a pesky federal agent. Unbelievable. Now, people, you can sell a pet rock, but you can't sell a moon rock. Got it? You know how to tell the difference? Well, I don't either exactly, but she could have sold it as a pet moon rock, and she would have been just fine. Anyway, getting back to my point, we've been to the moon, we've scraped up a few pieces of dust and rock, and we've brought them back. Big deal. That was the end of our space program. I don't think so. There's a lot more to it than that. You know, we missed the moon several times, and we had the great Wernher von Braun making the shots. And we figured out that it was the energy that the gyroscope it was vibrating or turning at something like 30, 40,000 RPM. The energy of the gyroscope was adding to the energy of the spacecraft going through space, and so it overshot the moon. And not by a little bit, by something like 30,000 miles. Whoops, we missed that one. And we did it a lot. In fact, the only one we actually hit, the gyroscope power supply failed. And then we hit the moon, and that's when we went, oh, we got it figured out now. The spin of the gyroscope actually adds energy to the movement of the craft. Very interesting stuff. Anyway, once we figured out that, then we were able to get there and back without any issue. That's just the beginning I mean, we can now really launch some stuff to the moon. No, we couldn't parachute it in like we do Mars because there's no atmosphere. But it wouldn't be that hard to take a low-budget sort of airbag kind of outer cavity, take something to the moon that would align itself with the moon, do a couple of retro things, and land and roll, and it could undo itself. We could put 30 or 40 of these robots up on the moon, and we could build stuff like a transformer. These things could come together and form a kind of habitat. And then we could launch men up there that know how to build stuff. And in a very short amount of time, we could find a suitable place to bore into the moon laterally and get underground where we can do stuff and keep ourselves safe from that pesky radiation that comes in from space and those high-energy neutrons, high-energy protons. We could do it. It could be done. The question is why? Because it's there for the first reason. Because Earth is far too small and fragile a basket in which to place all the eggs of humanity. And because it makes the deep exploration of space that much more feasible. Within 50 years, a large moon base could have the ability to lift some really amazing technology into orbit around Earth. And we're not talking about an orbit like the space station has, a couple hundred miles up, where the orbit has to be fixed two or three times a year by sending craft up there to give it a burn and get it further out into space. No, not at all. We could be way out there. We have satellites out there 23,500 miles. This is called the geosynchronous orbit, put out there by our friends down at Hughes in El Segundo. And that's how we have our GPS and our cell phones and our television stations. All of that is because of an array of geosynchronous satellites. And if we really want to put some big stuff out there and get it geosynchronous, we can get it out there even further, 30, 40, 50,000 miles. They'd have to be going at pretty good speed, and they'd have to be, you know, pretty heavy, but we could put solar sails on them to stabilize them. There's all kinds of things that we could do if it's getting too cluttered out there at 23.5 kW, or 23.5 kilomiles. If that street's getting a little crowded, we can put it at another address out there and still have great technology. We could put solar power converters that gathered sunlight, changed it into radio waves or microwaves, and beamed it back to Earth to power stations sitting in the middle of the desert that convert it into regular line voltage and distribute it to huge cities in a clean and renewable way. Gathering a few square miles of sunlight out in space and converting it into high-energy broadcast waves and sending it in a focused wave back down to Earth makes a lot of sense. Or building it on the moon. I mean, you got plenty of real estate up there. Some of those equators are the size of states and pretty flat. There's a lot you can do in a very low-gravity, no-atmosphere environment. Something that has sunlight almost 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, with the exception of the period of time when the moon is dark, which is not very long. The difference between a new moon and a waxing moon is not very much, just a few days. So there's a lot that we can do. So that is our program, actually, May 22nd. Oh, wow, 5 more days is my birthday. Those of you that are connected to me in LinkedIn know this. Those of you that see me on Facebook know this. Yes, the 27th of May is my birthday on this planet. So if you want to celebrate that with me, you are perfectly welcome to do that. There was one other thing I wanted to leave you with, and that is besides the Pythagoras conference coming up in December. And that is the the conference at James's, which is coming up the 24th through the 27th of June. This is a very reasonable 3-day event, 24th through 27th in Trout Lake, Washington. Fly into Portland. They will transport you from the airport to the event and back. Unless you're going to camp, then you'll have to bring your own stuff. And you could still bring that by airplane. You don't have to have a huge tent. It's not going to snow or anything. The weather is going to be great. Gets down to about 50 at night, which is great sleeping weather. But during the day, it gets on up close to 90. And the mountain is absolutely spectacular. I want you to pay attention to go to xsquaredradio.com and make sure to go down to the banner that says Beyond the Flower of Life. Beyond the Flower of Life. In the book, Remembering the Future, The Physics of the Soul and Time Travel, we talk about a style of meditation called Flower of Life Meditation. This was developed by Drunvalo Melchizedek, a good friend of mine and a great teacher, a great researcher. He has two fantastic books called The Flower of Life, Volume 1 and Volume 2. If you're into mathematics, you will really, really enjoy them. If you don't have a clue about mathematics, these two books are probably over your head. But Remembering the Future, The Physics of the Soul and Time Travel will prepare you for what you can discover, literally breaking through the barrier of time with your observation. Not only remembering the future, but also being able to put your influence on the future, to put your intention out in the future, and also to be able to go back to the past and repair those things that damaged you in the past. You can clear them from you, at least the way that you were affected by it. No, you can't put that finger back on that other person, and you can't restore that house that burned down, so to speak. But you can do a lot of things to the past, especially relative to how you were affected by that past, and that helps the present, which is the basis for the future. It works in both directions. The future, you can do stuff about. The past, you can clean up the mess a little bit or fix things relative to relationships and other things. And then you can put it all together. Well, that meditation, that Flower of Life meditation, is taught in a very basic way in the book, how to do your hand movements, how to breathe. It's a brief discussion of it. It is designed only to expose you to the meditation. Can you learn it from the book? Yeah, you can get the basics of it. What we recommend is that you do it for 5 or 6 weeks, see how you feel, and then I highly recommend that you click on this banner. I know you're banner blind, but I'm telling you to do it, Beyond the Flower of Life, and take a course from Maureen St. Germain. She's my master teacher. Taught me the advanced ways to do this meditation, and I highly recommend taking the course from her because she's a great teacher and she understands the nuances of this meditation. And then the book will give you the 18th breath. The 18th breath is pretty easy. You can do the 18th breath by itself. And Drunvalo says that's fine, but it's most important to be in your heart. And I found the best way to master getting into your heart is to master the Flower of Life meditation. I don't know if you could do one without the other. Perhaps you can. If you're really used to, you know, cheaping your way through things and trying to skip the shortcuts, and only taking the bullet version of everything, I suppose you can do it. If you want the richness of it and the experience of it, then I highly recommend taking the course. It's worth it. One last thing before we go. We've got about 5 or 6 minutes. I want you to go to xsquaredradio.com. One of the things that people pass up is the little like button. on the cover, right below the little bio with the pictures that change like a slideshow, you'll see the little Facebook check. I want you to click on that Facebook check and like X Squared Radio. We're trying to get this up to several thousand. We know based on the number of hits that we get that we've got enough people that are coming to the website. Let's see if we can get that Facebook up. And you'll also notice on the left-hand side that you can share this with Twitter, with Facebook, with YouTube, and other things. And we implore you to do that as well. This is how we're getting X Squared Radio out there. This is why it is the number one paranormal internet talk radio program on the internet. It's how we get around all the expensive SEO stuff. That's search engine optimization. And we're still making it. And it's because we're right here on BBS Radio, and you are right here with us. And we appreciate it very much. As we round out this May 22nd program, gosh, imagine that. We went from the 21st to the 22nd. The world did not end as it was predicted yesterday. It is all here, still here. Nothing's changed. Everything's okay. No radiation leak here. Everything's under control down here at Cell Block 9. I'm kidding. Not Cell Block 9. Southern Mississippi. Gorgeous, gorgeous night this week. I did have a chance this last week to visit the Stennis Sphere. The Stennis Sphere is a engine test facility in southern Mississippi. It's you can go there as the public. The tours started today. You can take a bus from the visitor center out to the base. And you can watch them test big rocket engines. I watched a Saturn IV engine just the other day. Spectacular. Spectacular. Takes your breath away. The facility that they have built there, they actually pump about 80,000 gallons of water a minute through a whole bunch of little quarter-inch holes to cool the sides of the blast chamber so that as this rocket blast comes out at 6,000 degrees, the walls never get above 212 degrees. So it, of course, instantly turns all that water to steam. So as the rocket engine is blasting away, you've got literally a cloud of steam being rocketed out the side and up into the sky. Now, if the conditions are just right, it will turn right around and rain. After that, yeah, it'll rain right on the spectators for several minutes. They actually built a 7-mile-long canal in which they collect fresh water. They pump this water into a giant cistern that holds about 2 million gallons. And if they test two rockets in one day, they almost drain that cistern. One 180-second rocket test goes through about between half a million and 1 million gallons of water. That's really incredible. It's a tremendous facility. And this is where the thrust and the control systems and steering systems of these rocket engines is tested. And as if that's not enough, there is a space camp quality museum for kids, even kids big as me, that is just amazing. Everything from oceanographic exploration, space exploration, solar exploration, all kinds of space shuttle mock-ups and globes, big globes that have four movie cameras pointing at them so that you can see what the Earth looked like in 1590, what the magnetic lines look like on the Earth, what the sun looks like in X-ray and visible light and H-alpha. It's really spectacular. I highly recommend that if you make your way down there, take this tour. It's a few dollars, no more than that. Get down to southern Mississippi and see the Stennisphere. Really spectacular system down there, and they've done a really, really great job. Nothing secret going on there, I guarantee you that. Not like going to HARP, where you're going to be met with a barbed wire fence, and they only have an open house 2 days a year when the facility is not running. Not the kind of taxpayer facility that we would expect to see for our dollars. And many people have tried to get in there, including Governor Jesse Ventura. In the first episode of True TV, on which I was participating as an engineer and scientist, I built the cloud chamber and demonstrated how HARP can actually move a cloud or move weather. He was not allowed onto the facility, and it was very strange that their digital cameras did some very freaky stuff during that attempt to get on the base. I want you to take care of one another, take care of yourself out there, and go forward in the morning with an attitude of gratitude, the attitude of gratitude toward each other, toward what you're doing for a living. And remember, you are source, people. There is no need to fill up your garage with toys, even though they think that is what really drives the economy. It is not. It is your ability to earn a living, put your kids through college, pay for those soccer shoes, buy a new car every now and then, and there's no race to see who has the highest credit card debt, okay? Bless you all. Have a great week, and we'll see you next week right here on X Squared Radio. It has been a great pleasure to have you here with us this evening. Tell a friend about us, because every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we bring you the best 3 hours of exploration into the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. If you're not getting all 3 hours, send us the call letters of your local station and we'll do the rest. Remember, Earth Explorers, that you are Source. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose. Reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day. And before long, you will have saved the planet. This is X Squared Radio saying, peace, Earth Explorers.